Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call to order the Staten Regular City Council Successor Agency Housing Authority Joint Regular Meeting. We did not have a closed session. If you'll please all rise. And Mr. Ames, if you'll lead us in the pledge tonight.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Joe. Madam Clerk, please call roll.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez.
Here.
And Mayor Chairman Shaver.
Here. This evening, we have no special presentations or awards, so we'll move to number six, which is our consent calendar. These could all be taken in one motion. Do we have from the public?
Mr. Mayor, we have none.
Okay, great. Is there any items that wish to be pulled or discussed by the staff or the city? Okay. It will be a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Okay, that would be A through. Through I. Okay, Madam Clerk, please call roll.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor.
Yes.
Council Agency Authority Member Van.
Yes.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez.
Yes.
Mayor Chairman Shaver.
Yes. Public hearings, we have none. Unfinished business, item 8A. This is an interim urgency ordinance of the City Council of the City of Staten extending for an additional period of 10 months and 15 days a moratorium on specified personal service on medical office buildings pending study and preparation of an update to the city's municipal code and zoning code to determine an ordinance to be exempt from CEQA.
And Mr. Mayor, just for the record here, this item was placed under unfinished business. However, it was noticed as a public hearing item. So if okay with Mayor Council, we'll be hearing this item under public hearing.
Is there anyone? I will now open public hearings. Is there anyone wishing to speak on item 8A? 8A.
Correct. That happens out in one motion.
I
actually
have a question on 6H. So. On who? Yeah.
Okay. Well, is that better?
Yes.
Okay. We'll take all of it under public comments, so we'll give you a chance to cover everything in a few minutes. Okay. You're all set. Anything you want. Okay, who's handling this?
Mr. Red.
Good evening, Mayor, members of council. On June 14th, 2022, the City Council adopted urgency ordinance number 1121, which established a 45-day moratorium on the establishment of specified personal care and medical office businesses. The basis for adopting the moratorium is set forth in detail attachment one, which is the City Council's June 14th agenda packet for the moratorium. The moratorium will expire on July 29th, 2022, unless extended pursuant to Government Code Section 65858A, which authorizes the City Council to extend the moratorium for an additional 10 months and 15 days. The attached urgency ordinance would extend the moratorium from July 29th, 2022 through June 13th, 2023. Staff is recommending the adoption of the moratorium extension ordinance to provide the city with additional time to study the continuing impacts of the above mentioned businesses and to develop a new municipal and zoning code regulations. The recommended action is to open the public hearing, receive any public testimony, and close the public hearing.
Okay, are there any questions from staff? Okay, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to address this? Okay, I'll close the public hearing, bring it back. I'll move one and two and three.
I have some questions.
Sure, go ahead.
I see that you guys had a few weeks to look into this, so you have a 45-day moratorium, and now you're requesting a 10-month plus moratorium. Can you elaborate why it is that much time?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a fairly comprehensive regulatory scheme that involves kind of understanding what's on the books in the city, what other cities, what the scope of the city's options are, kind of internal legal vetting, internal staff discussions, and then, you know, from all that, then preparing enactments then to bring to the council for the council's consideration and input. So it's just a, you know, that process has started, but, you know, the reason for the extension, the statute kind of contemplates an extension, is to give staff, city council, time to make sure it's that way.
And do you expect to be able to accomplish all that in 10 months and 15 days, or do you think you'll be able to do it sooner than that?
That's certainly a possibility. I know that there's certainly motivation for this to be done, done right, but also done as expediently as possible. And the thing about, too, this particular enactment would extend the moratorium for 10 months and 15 days, but it wouldn't be set in stone. So the event that, you know, six months from now, for instance, or 8 months from now, everything was ready to go and there was enactments for the council to act on, then, you know, as part of that effort, the council could terminate the moratorium early.
Based on the conversation with the city attorney, we anticipate that the project taking up between 4 and 6 months. So as the city attorney said, there is an opportunity to terminate that once the effective information is gathered.
So we've had the moratorium for about 28 days now. Can you tell me what we've done in those 28 days? I know that the report mentioned, you know, researching best practices utilized by local jurisdictions around the state related to abuses and preventing businesses from unauthorized massage. What are the best practices? What is our city doing that's short of that?
So as far as what has happened in the 28 days, I mean, we have the 10-day report that's on the last page of the agenda packet. I would say that the research is still ongoing. So we've started looking into things. It's a bit of a heavy lift to understand, you know, what other folks are doing, what's working well, what's not working well. So research has been initiated. As far as 28 days in, there isn't anything, I guess, tangible yet, which is kind of the basis for the contemplated
After 10 months and 15 days, is it possible to further extend, or is that the limit of the moratorium?
The statute does provide another opportunity for an extension. So you can extend a moratorium twice. First time, 10 months and 15 days, and then the statute gives cities an opportunity, if they want, to extend it for up to another year. It's optional, it's not mandatory. It's an opportunity that the statute contemplates for cities that rely on that.
My understanding is what prompted this was that we had some issues with perhaps an acupuncture business and police laws that proved to be providing illicit services, is that correct?
Correct. So what brought this forward, our massage establishment regulations are quite stringent. As a result of that, over the past few years, we've been monitoring the folks that have tried to find a way around those. And one of the elements, or one of the avenues that was taken, was the establishment of day spas, which is, when operated appropriately, a perfectly legal business. However, we were able to identify a couple day spas in town that were acting outside the norms there. So this, from a field perspective, this gives us an opportunity to press pause and then prevent those. It's essentially, once word got out that the massage establishment regulations that we have are quite stringent, folks started looking for ways around it. So this allows us to put that on pause as well as we address the issue. Similar to last meeting when this came up, we comparatively, and compared to our own past and compared to other cities, we are in very good shape from a numbers standpoint. Overall, we are down from 37 massage establishments down to 9, and then roughly 15 or so day spas. We have a handful now. So I think we're doing a decent job, but this is a good tool for us to just press pause and make sure we have a handle on everything.
And I understand the importance of doing this moratorium. I guess what worries me is the way you define personal service businesses, including include things like barber shops and nail salons and businesses that when I enter them, it just seems like a big open space with, you know, chairs. And it does not seem possible that any illicit activity could happen in those venues without somebody noticing because there is no private room or anything like that. So is it at all possible for us to consider making an exception for businesses or maybe taking out hair salons and nail salons that wouldn't naturally have a back room or private space?
Oh, and in conversations with individual conversations with council members today, staff kind of got the understanding that there potentially could be a desire to limit the scope of what the moratorium reaches if so extended. And so kind of in anticipation of that contingency, staff prepared a red line that's, to my understanding, has been printed and distributed that would look down on the new subpart three. It would do exactly kind of what you were alluding to in that it would only, so all the prohibited uses in subsection one above would only, that prohibition would only apply if services are provided to patrons in a private room or behind a partition wall, similar screen that shields patrons from public. So if something's public, for your example, then it would not be caught within the scope of the moratorium. However, if the circumstances provided in subpart three were present, then they would be the scope.
I appreciate that, because the last thing I want to do is hurt potential businesses that are providing good services for our city and don't have any way to engage in illicit activity and yet being punished because of this moratorium.
But is the moratorium just, it's for new business, okay, so it's not affecting current businesses?
My hope is that all the current businesses are going to get investigated or something.
It's forward looking.
And as previously stated, when this topic came up, we are in a position now due to the somewhat limited numbers of these establishments that each establishment, whether it be a day spa or massage establishment, is reviewed by city personnel at least once every 2 months, and that's not including the efforts by the Sheriff's Department in an undercover fashion.
Thank you, I appreciate that revision.
Go ahead, Gary.
On the day spas, any idea how many new ones have opened up, say, in the last 2 years or anything like that?
In the last 2 years, I believe, I would say two or three.
Okay.
That we are in them regularly. Obviously, the ones that ended up garnering the attention from the Sheriff's Department, we were part of that process, and we work well with the Sheriff's Department in that regard. So the ones that end up on our radar, we share that information with the Sheriff's Department, and then we're essentially out of it at that point. We don't want to know when they're taking action. We don't want to get involved in that. So they went through an extensive investigation. But the two that were problematic, we were aware of and forwarded that information on. The other ones, obviously, I can't commit to saying they are all 100% above board, but from our perspective, they check all the boxes, and they've been good partners.
Do you deal at all with the conditional use permits on this?
I do not.
Ms. Lilly?
So conditional use permits would come through the Planning Commission. So did you have a specific question?
Yeah, when I was on the Planning Commission, we dealt with a lot of those. But we never talked about day spas. I'm just wondering, would the conditional use permits be different for a day spa versus a massage parlor?
So in my time here, we haven't had any applications come through. I don't know how they would be different per se, but conditional use permit by its very nature allows us to condition uses based on the use itself. So we could tighten up restrictions and controls in some ways that would ensure that a nail salon or something else couldn't have those rooms that could be locked off in private. Or you could put a condition on hours of operation or opaque windows, things of that
right,
nature.
Right. Yeah, that was a biggie, was the opaque windows in the front. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I apologize for the folks that can't hear, so I'll just give you a quick rundown of what this ordinance is about. The reason we're doing this is we want to protect the public health and safety. Some operators of certain types of personnel services, such as massage parlors, things along those lines, acupuncture, they've been able to skirt our existing code and come in and do illicit activity, which is not good for our community. So what we're doing tonight is we're going to kind of take a stop and take a look at that so that we make sure that everybody is operating legally under the law, under our new ordinance, if we decide to go that way, to protect public health and safety. Thank you. So I'll now make a motion for that item, and I'll go with I recommended item motion for 2 and 3.
As amended or?
As amended.
As amended.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
Mayor Shaver?
Yes. Okay, under new business, we're now at Orangewood Avenue and Santa Rosa Street, traffic safety improvements. And I bet that's Mr. Ames.
Yes, sir, it is.
Yes, sir, that is my item. Would you like to hear the staff report? Okay. Orangewood and Santa Rosalia street traffic safety improvements. I'll just read the background here because it provides a great insight. As evidenced by multiple motorists hitting the guardrail at Orangewood Avenue and Santa Rosalia Street over the years, motorists traveling westbound on Orangewood Avenue from Beach Boulevard appear to mistakenly believe the roadway crosses the railroad tracks, connects with Western Avenue. Past efforts to thwart these collisions have included installing blinking LED lights around the stop sign at Orangewood Avenue and Santa Rosalia Street, relocating the guardrail closer to the intersection to avoid both the wall at the cul-de-sac and the guardrail from being damaged, and adding signage to the guardrail. Despite these measures, the guardrail continues to get hit. The latest collision occurred May 15th at approximately 2:30 a.m. I think we have a PowerPoint slide. Stuart. Slide.
What do I use? Next slide, and I will work with you, sir.
Okay. There is the damage from May 15th. The Dodge Ram pickup truck at 2:30 in the morning, according to some surveillance video from a nearby neighbor, hit the guardrail, backed up, and took off. This is apparently a common occurrence. In my time here as Public Works Director for the past 11 months, I think this is the second time we've replaced the guardrail, maybe the third time, some way, measure, and form.
Mr. Ames?
Yes.
What kind of truck was it?
Dodge Ram pickup truck.
Was it red?
No, it was not red.
That's because I changed the color.
that's thank you for the levity. Because this continues to occur and because there is a proposed parquet that will be eventually included in the cul-de-sac at the end of Orangewood, I came up with this proposed signing and striping plan for traffic safety improvements to address the appearance that the road continues to go on to Western Avenue. It looks like an arterial highway out there. It is clearly not. It is akin to more of a residential street. So these are some temporary improvements that will reduce the roadway from two lanes to one lane approaching the intersection, and also include some advanced signage. And the purpose of that is also to construct a small median island that would look like that, where we can place the stop sign in the middle of the roadway where the red oval is located. So Hartsog and Crable, our contract traffic engineering firm, is currently drawing up these plans. They're just going to get started shortly. And We also wanted to add additional signage on our new guardrail that was just installed. This is a mock-up of what it would look like at night. We did deploy these signs just prior to the 4th of July weekend on some temporary type one barricades in front of the guardrail. And, well, at least for the past week and a half, it hasn't gotten hit. And there's currently a work order in place with our public works maintenance crew to install these signs on the guardrail as a permanent fixture. In addition, there has been a suggestion from a nearby neighbor that the iron fencing on top of the wall that you can sort of see in the distance on the top of that wall would be screened with black screen material such that it would actually obstruct the view of the traffic signal over at Orangewood and Western from being seen over on this side of the railroad tracks. Based upon my own personal observations, as you're approaching the stop bar, if that green or black screen material were installed, it would make the signal disappear about 100 to 200 feet before the stop bar, such that you could not see the actual traffic signal. My humble opinion, a more permanent solution for shielding the traffic signal would be installing trees on the other side of the railroad tracks that are about 12 feet tall, and that would also screen the traffic signal.
Joe?
Yes, sir.
One of the things that we did historically is on Orangewood is if you go where the cross section is on Western, is that that light that has that green light, they put a blinder on it so that you could only see it a certain amount of feet as you're continuing on down Orangewood. I think when they restructured that, they forgot to put the sleeve back on that lens. If we could get that back on right now, it'd be a temporary fix, I think, that would start. The other thing I'd like to comment on is I really like those signs because I've seen them. I think they're very effective, but I would put reflectors all the way around them. And then that way, when they come down, all those will light up with reflectors. And that's just a little bit more cost, but I know that it makes it much more effective than just a plain sign.
Excellent suggestions. Regarding the louvers on the traffic signal, that traffic signal is in the city of Garden Grove. It's a Garden Grove traffic signal. Louvers are not in vogue today, fortunately. So what I've gotten in the way of an estimated cost from Hartsog and Crable to install a 3M product that's slightly different is on the order of $4,000 or $5,000. I'm imagining that City of Garden Grove is going to want us to pay for that, so I wanted to try the black screen material first in the trees, but I'm happy to do the 3M product as well.
I'll be more than happy to reach out to Mayor Jones on the city's behalf.
Okay.
It never hurts to ask, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that they're very cooperative in that, and I think that would be very helpful. Are we going to leave that barricade up once the park goes in?
No, sir. I'm going to go to the second part of the presentation here, which is going to show a conceptual plan for the Orangewood Park and some long-term solutions that are planned for the neighborhood.
Okay.
So if you don't know, the city applied for something called an active transportation plan grant with Caltrans, funded in part from state and is it the feds as well? And it involves putting Orangewood on a road diet from two lanes in each direction to one lane in each direction from the easterly city limits to Santa Rosalia. A sample cross-section of the proposed roadway shows one lane in each direction and still a parking. And the existing parking lane that is on Orangewood will be turned into a bicycle path and an additional parkway area. So if I can illustrate what that would look like on Orangewood, it would look like that as you approach the intersection. So you have more green space. Then there is the proposed Orangewood parkette at the intersection of Orangewood and Santa Rosalia. And this is what orange would look like as you go east towards Beach Boulevard until you get to the Garden Grove city limit near the school. And then similarly, on Santa Rosalia, we would actually add enhanced parkway areas where you'd have bulb outs with trees where the existing parking is aligned on Santa Rosalia. The idea with this is to make it more pedestrian and bicycle friendly in this neighborhood, and also adds a traffic calming element to signal to, especially to motorists who enter that neighborhood, that this is not a through thoroughfare, that this is a residential zone. So this grant, we're hopeful obtaining in order to do these kinds of improvements. This is part of the previously publicly noticed and publicly inputted active transportation plan. It was prior to my time. This is something that we wanted to get grant funding for. There's also some speed cushions on Santa Rosalia as well.
Those bulbs on Santa Rosalia, how many parking spaces will they carve out?
The estimate, as far as I can tell, in terms of loss of parking spaces, is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
Around 8 to 10%, maybe less. Depends where you actually place the bulb outs. There are, of course, some areas on Santa Rosalia that don't lend themselves for parking a car due to distance between existing driveways. So these are sort of suggestive locations for the bulb outs and for the speed cushions. This is a preliminary concept plan, so the actual construction plans, if this ever gets funded through the ATP process, would actually go through and actually look at that in quite a bit of detail. This intersection?
The Orangewood and Beach intersection, eastbound from Santa Rosalia. Yeah. That's where
that,
you have the
line that there. It's on the left-hand side, I believe, of that picture.
Yeah. Why couldn't we put a real median there with trees?
We could. The idea behind this concept drawing was to make a shorter crosswalk and to not have cars sort of meander as they enter into the residential subdivision. Certainly you could do a median in the center, a median island in the center, but part of this was also to try to preserve the left-hand turn pocket, so that way as you're going eastbound on Orangewood on a northbound Beach Boulevard, you would still have a traditional turn pocket rather than having a wider center median. So that was a conceptual sort of trade-off that we made there. One of the things that did get brought up was sort of like vehicle churning radius. This does seem to meet like a minimum vehicle churning radius. You'll see the large sweeping arc there at the corner. But that's something else that we'd have to play with a little bit in the final design. That is correct. I hope so.
Can't we do well-placed trees that
right.
cover up that light?
Exactly. Yes, you'll see a lot of foliage over on the backside of this particular version of the park design. The Orangewood Park is currently under design. A preliminary drawing is going to be brought to the Community Services Commission on Monday. I'm sure that'll be part of the input.
Evergreen. Any other questions? Go ahead, Alice.
Go back to the image that
striping.
Don't look at the diagram too closely. There's a couple of mistakes on there. I'm sure you could pick out a.
I won't point it out then. But I did want to mention that from what my understanding is, this is a temporary measure until we get the ATP grant and have that done. What is the timeline? Obviously, it's not certain that we'll get the grant, but if we were lucky and got it, what is the timeline?
For to construct the Santa Rosalia and Orangewood ATP years. It's like
okay.
2 to 3 year process.
So we're imagining that this striping will be in place for 2 years.
Yes.
If that guardrail, which I thought was pretty prominent, was still being hit by, I can only assume, a drunk driver, how is it that we can expect them to obey paint on asphalt? Like, is that really going to prevent them, or would it be possible to create a real medium so that there's physical barrier?
The short answer is yes, it is possible to create a larger median. I like to take the iterative approach regarding this. This particular work that I'm proposing is within the budget that we have for design services and our county contract for street maintenance. So I wanted to try something like less expensive first, signage, reflectors, louvers, paint on the ground, small median with a stop sign, and then the measure of success would be we're not replacing the guardrail as often or at all, seeing how well that works. I'm happy to construct a larger median. I think my suggestion would be is that if this seems to mostly work, that we could then construct a median within the striped yellow area and make a larger median. If we find that motorists are driving around the smaller median, driving the left of it, I don't know.
I guess my fear is that there's been concern from residents that if there were a park there, it's going to be an expensive park. Want that to be damaged because we failed to be proactive about traffic calming measures. So if you could, roughly give a price tag and a timeline, how much would it cost to actually put a physical meter?
In within the area that's shown in yellow?
Yes.
Off the cuff of my, you'd probably want to landscape it, have some stamped concrete around the edge, put trees in it, landscape it. I'm guessing $175,000 to $225,000 for construction.
Timeline, approximately?
That would be approximately for design 3 to 6 months and construction 4 to 6 months.
And that would probably get completed before the park is in place, is that right?
Quite possibly, yes.
It seems to me like, so what the plan is, we're going to do the paint on asphalt, and if, despite that approach, people still hit the guardrails, then the next approach would be a bit more aggressive, and it would be working over $1,000. Is that right? Or
well, that would be up to the direction of the city council. So this is within budget and is within the city manager's authority to do these improvements. So the cost of this is nominal compared to that. So
how soon can this get done?
Hartsog and Crable estimated they would have signing and striping plans done in 3 to 4 weeks. And then the county could go out and construct these improvements with their lead time in about another 60 days after that. So this is a fairly fast thing. I share the same concern with you regarding the Orangewood Parkette. That was the impetus for doing these improvements, because if you're going to put a park at the end of the roadway and we haven't solved this issue, then that's a problem. So that was the impetus for even suggesting some of this stuff to begin with, was to try to solve that problem ahead of Orangewood Parkette being constructed.
I'm very pleased with the stop sign that you've arranged that median, because I know that when I drive down that way, the right-hand side, that stoplight is sometimes blocked by trees, unless you go closer. So if you're driving fast and you're drunk or whatever, you may not see that stoplight. So is there any effort to make sure that existing stoplight is more visible? Are we going to have both? Are we going to get rid of the one on the right, or how does that going to work?
The additional stop sign in the new raised median will be in addition to the one located on the right side of the roadway. And like the one on the right side of the roadway, it's my intention to have it flash LED red lights. The one on the right side of the roadway is visible, but you're right. There are parkway trees that tend to obscure the visibility of that stop sign on the right as you're driving along the street. I've noticed that myself. Absolutely. I truly believe this is an iterative approach where we go through, we make these fairly simple improvements, and the measure of success will be if the guardrails hit again and or not.
Mr. Ames, I think one of the other things that maybe I would like to at least have you look into is one of the ways that you stop traffic from going into an area is by putting solid steel poles, the round poles. I think they're about 8 or 9 inches in diameter in the ground. If you just put them across the front there, I don't think any vehicle is going to make it through there. I think that that would be an inexpensive safety precaution. I don't know.
In the future, Orangewood Parkette, there will be bollards out there to stop vehicles because there will be improvements on the other side of the intersection worth protecting, and also children and people that might be using the park. The reason why a guardrail is out there today is we're not trying to kill the motorist. We are simply trying to stop the motorist from progressing down the end of the cul-de-sac and hitting the wall that's at the end of the cul-de-sac. There is nothing within the cul-de-sac itself that's worth protecting, so therefore the guardrail is in place because it is purposely not a device that is used to stop a motorist from driving 55 miles an hour down to zero and potentially killing the motorist. The idea is to hopefully slow down and stop most vehicles, but in the case of the white Dodge Ram pickup truck, obliterated the guardrail, but it didn't kill the motorist. So as a traffic engineer, we tried to recommend items, just like you see at off-ramps on freeways, they have water-filled devices that slow down vehicles rather than putting bollards out there. Same idea here. We're not trying to kill the motorists. We're just trying to prevent further destruction of items beyond the guardrail.
I was thinking of the future.
Right. Okay. So at the park, we'll do bollards are proposed, and those will prevent vehicles from entering onto the playgrounds and potentially hitting people.
I've seen those inflatables, the big ones on the freeway. Would that be a less expensive thing to put up there now?
The only problem with, I don't know if it'd be less expensive, but since those water-filled, sand-filled trash cans and inflatables are, this is perpendicular to the traffic that's coming down Orangewood. If you put up a K-rail, concrete, water-filled, or otherwise K-rail, it has the same effect as the bollard that I was just talking about. So it's less forgiving, the motorist that hits it. If you orient something that's actually like a crash cushion, that's a series of water or sand-filled trash cans that are in a chevron fashion, that are form a series of triangles, that would also be a cushion, but that wouldn't, in my opinion, less expensive than a guardrail. There's a lot of different ways of addressing this problem. Still in favor of the guardrail with additional signage and the signing and striping improvements for balancing costs versus public safety of the surrounding residents and neighbors. Also, not trying to kill the motorist that hits the guardrail. So,
okay. One other thing was illumination, lighting up that whole area. Have we looked into the feasibility of brightening that whole area up so that what we have there is more apparent?
I have not looked specifically into street lighting or street light poles at the corners, if that's what the question is concerning. Unfortunately, street light poles are fairly expensive to install in order to provide additional illumination. So I have not investigated that because I took this to be more of a project within the existing budget that we already have for maintenance. So I wanted to start off with this rather than also investigating additional street lighting. But however, I'm happy to do whatever the council like me to.
Well, the only thing I was going to ask was that if we put two large poles up, one on each side, and we put two solar banks up, solar lighting does not require any wiring. And the new lighting that they have, the lumens that come out of it, would simply brighten that whole area up. And as long as it didn't interfere with the neighbors and their housing, it might be something we could take a look at.
We certainly could take a look at that.
Yeah, so it may be solar, just a thought.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, so we are now at recommended action. One and two, this is just a receive and file, so we're fine. Okay, we're now at item number 10, oral communication. At this time, members of the public may address the City Council, the successor agency, the Stanton Housing Authority, regarding any items within our subject matter jurisdiction, provided that no action may be taken, limiting to 3 minutes. So at this time, I'm going to open oral communications. We have not received any written at this point.
No, Mayor.
I'm going ahead and open it up to the audience. If you would like to address this, please come up. Just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes on any topic of your choice.
If I may answer that?
Sure, go ahead, Joe.
The skip loader is currently 21 years old.
Okay, so it has, it's beyond its life. Okay, that was my concern, because there was none of that information there.
Apologies. It's part of the attachment to the agenda report that's posted online. I think we just printed the summary out here for the public to view.
Okay, and then last but not least, I've been noticing, my question is would anybody in the City Council $2 to $3 million
But, you know, let's celebrate it, not create a noise. It's a bomb. I've heard bombs. It was in Second World War, so thank you.
If at the end of the, just towards the end, we're going to get our update on the 4th of July report from our chief, and I think that he'll be able to answer some of the questions that you're asking.
Well, it's been going on for at least 5 years that I know of. And it's as the lady said, it's unbelievable. It shows no concern for the residents in the area. It's terrible. Thank you for your time.
Kathy, pull the microphone up just a little, please. Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Over here in Lafar Park, it's like a war zone over there. I'm not kidding. A war zone. On the 4th of July, it's like a war zone for 4 days straight. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. I have to medicate my dog, too. And I shouldn't have to medicate her. She won't make it another year. Next year, she's 12 years old. I adopted her at 3 months old. Now she's 11. She's going to be 12 August. But she won't make it another year. It's devastating on the 4th of July. I called the police 3 times on the 4th of July because it starts real early. In the morning, it's like a 24-hour deal over here. I called the police. I brought my phone to show. I called the police 3 times, and they said they'd send somebody out. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I just have to go to a motel to enjoy my place over there. I've been there 4 years, and it gets worse every year. Every year it's worse and worse. And there it's illegal, and it's like I'm in Mexico or something. It's just like a war zone, and it's coming from all sides. So if I go to a motel, I have to go way too far away because the motel across the street is too close to all the neighborhoods.
It's that damn apartment next
door. And because they get away with it every year, and so now it's getting worse and worse and worse. They get away with it every year. I've been here 4 years, and it's been getting worse and worse. Please, that's why I'm here, is begging for help on the 4th of July. And because nobody gets arrested, nobody cares. So they just goes on and on and on, and we're over there to suffer.
No.
Well, then why aren't you doing something about it? Why are you expecting us to be up here every year bitching and complaining about it? Thank you.
Yeah, we have two ordinances that cover fireworks. We do have a noise ordinance above a certain decimal level, and we also have the fact that any firework that leaves the ground is illegal in the city of Stanton. This was a perfect storm. We only had two firework booths in the city because there's no product for legal fireworks. Also, they're outrageously priced. So rather than people going out and buying legal fireworks, this year we in a study that's being put out, everybody went out and bought illegal fireworks because they're cheaper and people enjoy them more. One of the other things is that we're going to recommend, we have a new chief. We were in transition between an old chief and a new chief between the 4th of July, prior to it and after. One of the things that I know the council is very strong about, including Mr. Taylor, who's spearheading this, is we're going to have an after-action subcommittee that's going to take a look at this fireworks and take a look at what the cause and effect is. I think we've talked about this for the last 20 years. One of the problems is, and I'll just be quite frank with you, according to the law, our deputies have to actually see the person light the firework and then at that time cite him. Now, the problem with citing is you got to write all his rights, you got to write the tickets, and that takes, I don't know, his chief will tell me how long it takes before we can move on to the next one. I'll be honest with you, I know every address of every house in the city of Stanton, including the guy that's my neighbor, that simply uses Class B, which is illegal even at Disneyland. And that's what the problem is right now. We know where they are, we just can't cover that big an area with an action plan that we didn't really have in place this year because of the transition. I'll just be honest with you. In the future, we need to be better prepared to address these concerns, even more so than we have in the past. And the only way we do that, and I know Mr. Taylor will be more than happy to take charge of the subcommittee, to where we sit down with our law enforcement, our public safety team, and try to come up with some kind of a solution for relief. I am sick and tired of my two German shepherds taking off every time one of those large bombs goes out. I'm sympathetic with you, but I'm being honest with you. Right now, we don't have a cure for this, but we do need to find a cure. I can't promise you that we're going to do it, but at least with our new committee, subcommittee, working with public safety and our sheriff's department, we might come up with something that's going to give us a little relief. I don't see it getting any better in the future. And one of the problems, too, is that we're a very small city, and a lot of those loud noises are from your neighbor that lives in Garden Grove that live behind you, or Anaheim or Cypress and Los Alamitos. Every city is endemic with this. We're not the only city that has this problem. Solution, there is a solution. I'm not sure what that solution is, but we're listening to what you say. I'm just telling you that we don't have a answer for you right now, but we're going to be working on it. I noticed that Chief was taking notes tonight, and we'll be happy to let you know in the future. Probably once the committee has met, we'll have you come back in and we'll give you a report. I think tonight the chief will be able to give you a little bit of an overview of what transpired that night, and I think it will work out really good. Oh, by the way, the OCSD fireworks is not on the agenda tonight, but at the end of this meeting, he gives his monthly report, and I'm sure he can make a couple of comments about it. The reason we can't make any action is because it's not on the agenda tonight. So just kind of, this was an information piece. Thank you. Okay, now if there were behind you, that basically on this side is Garden Grove, but I can tell you where your problem is. It's the apartments on Lamson. I've driven through that neighborhood for the last 4 years, and it's a war zone. I agree with you. It's a war zone. But anyway, let us try to help you, and we will get back to you. We're going to put this on the agenda once that we get the subcommittee going, if the council agrees to do that, and we'll be able to give you a full report. Go ahead.
I think if they see the police drive around, it might scare them a little bit, but when they don't see them at all, you know, they just get away with everything. You know, I remember in the old days, you'd say, oh, my God, there's the police, and then they calm down a little bit. It's like a war zone. Nobody cares. So they, because no police are driving around, but if they're maybe driving around, you know, where they, in our apartments, maybe, you know.
Yeah, once we get this on the agenda, we're going to welcome all of you folks back and others in the community that would like to make suggestions. It's something that will be discussed, and I think it's good for us to put it on the agenda so that we can also take action on it. But unfortunately, tonight we don't have it on our agenda, so we can't say we're going to do this. However, we are going to move forward. I'm going to recommend in the future that we do that, and of course, we can hear from the chief on his normal report. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
I just one point of clarification, because this has come up online a lot over the 4th of July. What the fireworks booths sell are little sparklers, little fountains, nothing goes up in the air. Selling those, they're not. They're selling the little sparklers.
No, it's the problem is they use that as if they see something, okay, well, we're displaying this. You know, maybe what they're suggesting is not that they're confusing them, they're suggesting maybe we just ban fireworks. So that way, any fireworks, boom, you give them a ticket. You know, because that's going to get around and people are going to say, hey, you know, I got a ticket. You know, it's
okay, well. You know, that is a great, that's one of the recommendations that will be discussed at that time. Thank you. I can see a twinkle in my eye. I can already see who the two subcommittee members are going to be. It's going to be Alice Van, and it's going to be Gary Taylor. Am I right?
Yeah.
See, I don't believe we can take action on this, but we can definitely talk about this later.
No, I'm just being a soothsayer. We're not going to do it tonight. Okay. Anyway, folks, thank you very much for coming out. We're very happy to hear from you. You're always welcome to come to our council meetings and address any concerns that you have anytime.
They're weekly, right?
They are. Bi-weekly. It's the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. Okay, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address the City Council at this time? Uh-oh, we're in trouble now. Put your mic up so we can hear you.
Hello, John Warren. I just wanted to get up here and express that the commission has been expressing the same concerns about our potentially having vehicles inside the park at Santa Rosalie and Orangewood. And that.
Hey, ladies, gentlemen, please, we have a speaker. Thank you. Go ahead.
But we've also expressed the same concerns about wanting to make sure that park is safe, and glad for the comments tonight and wanting to mitigate that. And living right off of Orangewood, it has never particularly made sense. Have a single lane road that divides into two going into a neighborhood where the four lane road. It's obviously never made sense to me, and so I'm happy to see the measures. On top of that, thank you for the crosswalk down at Rodeo 39. So, just to add regarding fireworks, I have a drone. Maximum height limit of a drone is 400. I get a good full of North Orange County, and it's up to the horizon. And I can watch Disneyland fireworks everywhere you look. I mean, it's big up here in North Orange County. It is South County. If you have fireworks down there, you're going to burn the hillside. That's the way it's always been up here. I like to read the paper. It's been a problem for decades. 400 cities in California, they're always trying to find solutions. All sorts of. And this is a prevalent problem that's gone on for a long time. I admire every city trying to do their best to solve the problem. They're trying. Sam's trying, Anaheim's trying, Vernon Grove's trying. We all like to think we have solutions. Sometimes they take time to figure them out. I get annoyed by them. Take time. Sometimes laws that can change. Draft state law. Have to abide by state law. And got to work with. I want to say thank you to our department. Watch the deputy light somebody for lighting in front of a patrol car. That was their mistake, but.
That's still great.
He got to personally meet two deputies. Good for him. But I know at least one person got a suspension. I know that's Nova. Anyways, I just wanted to say thank you, council, for your concerns regarding the park there. We're going to grab that. Thank you for what you're trying to do. And I just want to thank you.
At this time, is there anyone else like to address the city council? Okay, I'll go ahead and close the public comment section and move on to written communications. We have none. Mayor, council, agency, authority, initiated business. Okay, committee reports or announcements.
Yeah, Jennifer, can you talk about the business site visit we did today?
Yes, Mayor, members of the council, today we visited White Bottle, which is a holistic pharmaceutical company that packages and manufactures and distributes different vitamin supplements and materials here in town. They gave us an amazing tour of their facility. If you drive on Dale, you'll see what looks like almost an office business. from the exterior. When you get into the entry and go beyond that original entry point, you're actually in a full service warehouse. But they've taken their warehousing one step further, and they've actually built out what they refer to as pods. So all of their different packaging or putting powders into pills or anything like that is actually in an individual pod manned by the personnel that's working on that, the machinery that's working on that. There's no smell. There's no dust of powder. There's no nothing that would allow you to know what's happening inside. All of those pods are individually operated with their own HVAC. And when they're done with whatever manufacturing they're doing that day, they then can clean down that individual pod so it's much more efficient and effective. It's a really incredible high-tech business that's right here in Stanton. What we also were able to learn is that Alchemist Labs that we visited 2 months ago is one of their product testers. And Alchemist Labs is down at our south end of town, just kind of behind Rodeo 39. They are a world-renowned tester of products and materials. And the fact that this business wasn't sure at first, even because they have multiple sites, so they send off their materials, and for them to learn that their tester is right here in Stanton is this great synergy. And then they were telling us about a couple other businesses in town, a label maker that they use that's right there on their campus. And so it's great to see how our different businesses are interacting. Very informative. We learned a lot about their employment team and some wants that they would have of us keeping them really informed on new housing opportunities that are coming up. And the last thing I'll share, and if I missed anything, please feel free to add. They did move their business here from the city of Irvine. They shared part of their draw to come here was the rents were cheaper, but we also had the land and building availability, but also their freeway accessibility for their employees. Much of their staff is coming from either Santa Ana, Tustin, mentioned one other place, and it's escaping me right now. But essentially this area, but getting here off of either the 22 or the 91 makes it very convenient for their employees. So the move was really seamless. And they did mention that in all their time they were in the city of Irvine, city never came out and reached out to them like we did today. So they were very appreciative of that as well. Did I miss anything?
Nailed it. Thank you.
Okay, any other announcements at this time? Okay. 12B, council agency initiated items for a future meeting.
Fireworks.
Okay, put it down. You know what? We probably should have my recommendation is let's get the subcommittee formed and then.
We need it on the agenda.
He's got to write it out.
Yeah. We'll sounds good to me.
I want to write it out.
Okay.
But I will. Okay. I can do that.
All right. Sounds good, Yuri. We'll take care of it. All right. Okay, this will be a future study session. Maybe we should have a fireworks study session. That'd be better. Okay, we won't do that, so we'll just have the other one. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, presentation by the Stanton Public Safety Services Department relating to services and resources provided and offered to the homeless communities in the city of Stanton.
Good evening, Mayor, members of council. Staff has been asked to provide an update regarding the efforts of our outreach coordinator program. The outreach coordinator program consists of 4 employees that provide coverage in the city 7 days per week. The outreach coordinators are a key component of the city's 3-prong approach to addressing the issue of homelessness. The other prongs involve the code enforcement division, which provides daily enforcement of municipal codes, site cleanup, and response to complaints from the residents and members of the business community. Also, Public Works is quite helpful in that endeavor as well. The third piece of the puzzle is enforcement component provided by the Orange County Sheriff's Department. They also do provide outreach on occasion when the behavior of individuals meet certain criteria. OCSD will be able to provide resources such as transportation to the BeWell facility. However, the critical element of OCSD involvement is enforcing law related to criminal activity. On the dais, there's a copy of the homeless services report for the second quarter of the calendar year. at the end of the report, it includes a number of our success stories, which I know you like reading. Additionally, we have outreach coordinators Guillermo Mendez and Damian Fonseca here to provide additional insight to the approach taken in the field while addressing issues associated with the homeless community.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is Guillermo Mendez.
Sorry,
the outreach coordinators for the
city. You can move the mic closer to you. Perfect. Thank you.
And we begin our day by checking the bed inventory at the facilities, such as Buena Park Navigation Center, Bridges at Kramer, and the Placentia Navigation Center. Then we address our hotspots and respond to business and residential calls pertaining to homelessness. We also tackle any locations that may come forward through our outreach line. And we also respond to public service request form that are filled out through our website online. Additionally, we work alongside the Sheriff's Department through the day responding to calls of service if an individual is seeking help or if they just come across them. Additionally, we work with our public safety department with if they have to deal with any similar manner. As far as our approach, we engage an individual and we screen them to deem what appropriate resources would work for them, such as shelters, housing resources, medical attention if need be, connecting them to mental health resources, talk services, and we can also connect families to family programs or youth resources. This process also includes checking to see if they've been connected to an outside agency through Outreach Grid or HMIS, which is our homeless management system information system. And with that system, we're able to see if they were previously in Anaheim, Santa Ana, and we have connections to agencies that are located there. And we're able to basically get in communication with them or speak on their behalf to try to see if we can get them into a shelter that's in their city. Because they might not qualify for shelters within our city. And this will help stabilize the individual and provide them with resources based on their past residential ties. Equally important, we work with outreach and engagement with from the Orange County Healthcare Agency and also our newly established Volunteers of America has gotten granted a regional outreach contract. So we'll be working with them on a weekly basis. They have access to more veteran services than we do, but we're hoping if we come across veterans here in Stanton, we're able to get them to transitional housing pretty relatively fast. If an individual does decline, we will pass it over to our behavioral health deputy who will make the final judgment on the situation, depending if they need to be 5150'd, cited, or warned for trespassing. Lastly, our team continues to build relationships with local businesses and residents. Now that there's four of us, we're able to kind of be more present out in the streets 7 days a week. And we provide them with any our direct contact information and advise them to call us if need be.
Mayor and council members, I also wanted to provide you guys with two highlights that we had this quarter. In regards to a family from Stanton and a senior from Stanton that were about to fall into homelessness. We were able to use our in-house prevention service programs to provide support to these to this family and individual to prevent them from falling into homelessness and spending night in the street. We were able to assist them with housing navigation, working with landlords and all that good stuff to provide them a more permanent, stable housing situation. And I'm glad to report that they are now stabilized. The family is back in, on track. We've been able to assist the mother with a be able to obtain work, and she's currently back in school trying to progress her education to increase her income. So with that said, we are glad to report that she's almost done and is going to complete our rapid rehousing program. Aside from that, our senior individual who was about to fall into homelessness is now stabilized as well and is exiting our rapid rehousing program and is now stabilized himself and is able to maintain housing. So through these efforts and through the efforts of the team, we've been able to help these individuals, not only on the street, but to prevent individuals that are falling into homelessness that are from Stanton.
Thank you. And we're available for any questions.
Oh, go ahead, Yuri, we'll start with you.
Wasn't there another individual that was aging out of foster care? I thought I read that someplace. There we go. Did I miss? Are you there?
We did have one recently where there's a transitional age youth. I don't know that they were specifically aging out of foster care, okay, but they were in that age range.
Right.
I believe they use the term transitional age youth, and I think that's 15 to 18 or whatever it is. And they there was a element there where that individual was essentially coming into a very dangerous situation and spending time on the street, and we were able to...
It sounds like three really great success stories, correct, that we truly... enjoy having. I mean, that's fantastic as far as the name of the city. We're not anti-homeless. We're trying to help people. We want to make sure that message is out there all the time, and I know you guys do a great job with that. I did hear you say something about an outreach line. I haven't heard that one before. We have a line where the public can call in?
Yeah, so that's posted on our Stanton website. It's our outreach hotline. That's there for the public to reach out to us. Just call us at any time. And, of course, if we're not in office, we do get the voicemails to our cell phones as well. So if we're out on the field, we are able to contact businesses and residents at any point in time or the client that's reaching out for services. Aside from that, as Guillermo mentioned, we do have the online request application where residents have been active in requesting or submitting requests for things that they're seeing on the street for us to address. Aside from that, we also do outreach to businesses and community members. So a lot of businesses have either my direct contact information or the outreach hotline, and they call us when, you know, let's say there's an encampment setting up, or they come across an individual that's in CECA services. They provide them that information so we could get in contact with them as well.
You guys can be in contact with the deputy, correct? Deputy Hicks?
Correct.
I think one key point on the family, that we were able to help avoid in one night of homelessness. There was a 10-year-old child involved?
Yes.
So I think that as far as some of the wins that we've had, I think that, in my opinion, is arguably our best one, that we were able to prevent a single mother and a 10-year-old child from spending one day on the street. So that's something that, in terms of us trying to be as innovative as possible, anytime that I've been asked to speak at other cities regarding our program, I think that's something where we're a little bit ahead of the curve. Obviously, there's a ton of work to be done, but whenever we can have those contacts established where we are made aware of those situations, and in particular, keeping a kid off the street, I think that was a huge win. And we're routinely engaged with the young lady to make sure she stays on track. So I think that as far as what we've done to this point, that's been probably our best win.
And just one more question. You are in contact with businesses. Churches. Some of the churches hand out gas cards or meal cards or a one-night stay at a motel or anything like that. Have you guys made any kind of contact with some of the larger churches in our city?
So that actually, that we haven't come across it all that often on Stanton-based religious entities. However, you have identified one of the difficulties that we are presented with in the field. For instance, today, in particular areas where we will go through and conduct a morning's worth of operations. Not that I sound cranky about it, but we spent half a morning on industrial mercantile area, and shortly thereafter, there's three vans donating food to folks and brought everybody back in. So that is a very difficult area. The city attorney may have some opinion on it, but it's something that's, my experience, it's quite difficult to regulate, and it's just essentially another hurdle that we have to overcome. We haven't specifically, in my, I'd say in the last couple of years, dealt with churches from outside the area bringing people here and putting them up in motels, but that had occurred before when there would be an encampment and then a church would get together and quote-unquote clear the encampment, but they would just give them 2 weeks in a local motel here, then we would end up with some new clients, as they call them.
Somebody had told me that St. Polycarp was doing something.
No,
I haven't heard anything to that.
Gary, okay. They're not. In fact, they have a problem with transients here that are robbing a church.
I bet.
Yeah.
so much for the presentation. I love the success stories, affirmation that we made the right choice. I have to say, I feel like I've heard this presentation 5 or 6 times. I keep bringing this back. And I remember when Mr. Taylor asked for this agenda that he had mentioned, he gave us an update about it. Work that was being done.
I would say I think I can touch on that. Many of the when we on a daily basis, the contacts that go straight into the outreach coordinators on the public safety side, we receive just as many, if not more. And then part of our morning duties are getting out and getting in the field. We essentially execute a form of a kind of a mobile dispatch center, where we're all out and about in the field, in contact with each other, in contact with the outreach coordinators. I am most definitely happy to report, I would say in my professional opinion, in the past 3-4 weeks, there has been a definite upturn in the level of cooperation with the Sheriff's Department. We've seen more activity, and not only have we seen it, it's been noticed by the business community. So members of the business community that I have good contacts with have reached out and made comments to me about the increased activity level of the Sheriff's Department. And I think moving forward, as previously stated, there's work to do. But I think we're working through, developing enhanced capabilities. How's that? For moving forward over the next few months. Obviously, a new crew on board, it's gonna take a little time, but I'm really looking forward to getting some of the projects done that we're looking at. We've identified some specific target areas that are very, very busy right now, but we're hitting them really hard, and that's been noticed by members of the business community.
So I won't be hearing residents coming up saying, you know, their friend who owns some business on some street is leaving because of.
I mean, depending on the source, you may very well hear anything. Essentially, everything stated by the individual was inaccurate. Other than that, you very well may hear that. The empty businesses on Monroe, in large part a result of being purchased by larger businesses and improved, and Monroe looks 10 times better than it used to. So I think that would be more accurate to frame it in that regard. However, you also touch on a situation I referenced it earlier. This situation not only changes daily, it changes 2 or 3 times during the day. There's essentially a morning shift and an afternoon shift, and then we see what happens at night. So we've worked with Captain Walters about enhancing the overnight presence related to the homeless issue, and we're starting to see the effects of that. So it can change very, very quickly. So I would bet you nickel someone will complain to you, but no one's leaving the city because of it. And I would I know it's not terribly popular to compare yourself to other cities on this topic, but I could take you on my route here every morning, and we look better than a lot of folks around us. So.
South end of town, recommending Walmart was, and they were saying that this year was particularly bad. Every morning they were just walking around collecting debris and, feces and things like that to clear the areas so that customers can come for these fireworks. And they were witnessing all these horrific things, including prostitution and things like that.
Sure.
So I don't know if that's going to improve or if you have any plan for that specific.
So that area of town is particularly tough related to the issues under the 22 freeway and on that Garden Grove border. When they enforce, they come over. We are aware of their enforcement activities, and we will literally deploy every single person we have on the border of the city. There's a couple things in play. I mean, it is a Walmart, and it is in a tough spot. It does this. We typically don't get much prostitution activity down there, but that is a particularly tough center. And we spent, that's part of our first stop is essentially, one of our first stops is that Walmart center, and then Court and Garden Grove directly behind that center. So that's it is quite an area.
Great work, guys. I appreciate the effort. Appreciate the reporting for sure. Anything that we could do to help you guys, please let us know. I do have one question, though. Total client encounters. I understand that you could, that adds up to seeing the same person multiple times. What's your typical success rate in terms of offering a shelter? Is it higher when you initially engage the person, or is it after the third or fourth time you engage the person? Just curious.
So as far as shelter goes and acceptance of shelter, it kind of depends on the availability and where the individual's from. So not everyone's from Northern Orange County. So that's, you know, that makes it very difficult as far as what we have available and what the acceptance rate would be compared to someone for individuals who are, per se, from Anaheim or Garden Grove and don't have any ties. So the acceptance rate for individuals, would say, within Stanton, it's actually pretty high for those who have ties to Northern Orange County. But a lot of these individuals aren't here necessarily looking for shelter or that type of resource all the time because they're already connected from other areas. So we see that influx of individuals coming in here, and we have a high amount of individuals, which we get calls about, right, when enforcement's done. So that number is always going up and down because they're connected to other services in other areas. So to answer your question, I want to say, based on availability, it's high, but it also depends on where the individual's from.
For example, post-enforcement in the Garden, when Garden Grove, Westminster, or CHP hit that area of Beach and Garden Grove, they're part of it, the acceptance rate is low because no one's from here. So it a lot of it is environmental in terms of how they end up here. My experience with the quote-unquote homegrown or those that have roots in the area, it is one of the reasons we went to our own outreach coordinators away from the contract is you can really develop that relationship. And, you know, I got a call today from someone who we've been working with for 2 months, and she says she's ready to go. So we have that relationship. But a lot of when the numbers are low, it's related to enforcement in other areas.
Gentlemen, you are shining stars. Your reputation has gone throughout the county for the program that we have here. Hopefully we can get it back to where it was a few years ago. You know, one of the things that I'm very much concerned about is what can we do to make and help you? And the reason I'm throwing that out to you is that I know most of the people that are left on our streets are resistant. I would say, I'm just guessing, 90%. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. According to the settlement agreement that we did with the Orange County workers and with Judge Carter, if they are resistant to anything that we have, and we've gone back multiple times to help them, they don't belong here anymore. It's time for them to move on, especially if they're in an encampment. I will tell you right now, for two straight weeks on Union Pacific Railroad, the same individuals were there night after night after night, and they also did criminal activity night after night. And so according to, and I hope that, I hope Ryan, you can help me with this, according to Judge Carter and the settlement agreement, if we keep offering it to them and they just keep coming back, I think they're subject to a citation or arrest. And nobody's ever told me if that's true or not. And if it is, why aren't we doing that? And I'm just asking if that's something that will help you. Can you comment on repetitive offerings and what percent of our population is resistant? And I know that you know the same people I know, because I know every one of them in the city, because I've talked to every one of them, and I've offered every one of them help, just like you have. So please help me.
So correct. Based on Judge Carter's settlement and agreement with the City of Stanton, North Spa, we are, you know, obligated to offer these services and prior to enforcement. All of our services are that are offered and declined are documented on Outreach Grid. So once that's documented and, you know, they continue to decline services, that's when we redirect that type of enforcement or type of service to our sheriff's department. And that's, we leave it to our behavioral health deputy to, you know, decide what route to go enforcement-wise, citation-wise, once that information is in their hands.
I was going to say real quick, yeah, that's how the settlement agreement works, is services are offered first, and then it's, you know, enforcement, law enforcement, I guess, absent exigent circumstances, law enforcement, and when there's someone declines.
How many citations have we written for this in last three years?
That is something I do not know.
HD told me zero. I wonder if you could get that information for the council. That would be very helpful.
So the request is citations for folks
who violated their side of the settlement agreement. Oh, go ahead.
So there was a time period where there were no citations issued. I, as previously stated, I truly feel we are trending upward in terms of the Orange County Sheriff's Department response to the issue. I know Chief Walters is at day 15 or 16, but I really think we give him a few more days and we'll get after it. I really think we're headed the right direction. I do feel we are at the enforcement stage. One of the things I think we've done a good job of, as mentioned by Damian, was, you know, these contacts are documented. I think there's some methodologies in the field that Chief Walters and I have discussed upgrading or evaluating their effectiveness, and I think we're going to be able to move forward here in the next few months.
If our numerating law enforcement agencies are following the guidelines, issuing either citations or arrest, the transgency world has a very good communication system. They also have their own lawyers. So if a city is not issuing any citations, making any arrests, or trying to enforce our portion of the settlement agreement, why would you not come to Stanton?
Correct.
From under the 22 freeway and our neighboring cities?
We definitely do not want to be the soft spot, and we are taking the necessary steps where we will not be perceived as that moving forward. If it makes you feel better, everybody hates me in the field, so I think that's a positive sign that we're out there working. At the same time, those looking for assistance know that we can provide that for them. So I think moving forward, we're going to be in a good spot. But you're right in terms of particularly on the border areas. If Anaheim executes an operation overnight and I have my contacts there and they'll let us know it's coming, we get bodies. If they're taking action at, you know, Beach and 22, we're going to get bodies. And that's essentially the nature of the game at this point. But when that does occur, we have to have a strong presence there in order to prevent them from setting up.
I have a question for the city attorney. We have, a few months ago, we had a mobile prostitution drug mobile that supplied all the tweakers on bikes in our city drugs, and we're able to eliminate that problem. Recently, they gather now at one of our parks, and there's maybe about 20 of them on their bikes. They get their drugs in the morning from the local drug supplier, and they go out and they sell drugs to everybody. My question to you is, what, as we as a city, can do with that? Is it against the law? Is it something that we as a city can enforce? Or is it such a minuscule, minor misdemeanor that nobody can do anything about it?
Mayor, that's a great question. I think take an analysis of what activity specifically is the activity in question. And then the big elephant in the room is a doctrine called preemption. So that's when, you know, the state, for instance, has a penal code provision or something that is in the penal code that speaks to that behavior, a local ordinance, generally within any area of law, you can't duplicate or conflict or crowd into an area of law that the state has spoken for, if you will. So it would, I'm not saying that there's nothing we couldn't do, but it would take research and specifically looking at, okay, what are we trying to address and where, and then what is Sacramento left for cities to legislate in, and what is the state regulated, and then, you know, coming to a legal conclusion based on what may or may not be available.
Yeah, and so that's my point. When are we going to tell the residents of the city of Stanton that open drug dealing, people selling drugs, and people using drugs openly, basically the city can't do anything about it? To me, that is the direction we've been going. It's the direction that we've established. It's what's going on in our community. Now, this is not, I'm not putting you on the spot, but Jim, maybe you can answer this. How do we tell the public that we can't stop this and we can't help them? Maybe, like, what do we do? Every day, I'm sure we all get these calls about, why are you letting people do drugs in front of a store? Why are you letting people sell drugs? And they see it because it's so apparent.
I think it's incumbent upon my department and the resources that we have available to enforce as much as we can and enforce around the issue as much as possible. It prevents us, we see the difficulties with some of the statutes in play more than everybody. At the same time, we can't, I don't want to put the city in the position through our department saying we can't do anything about it, so we look for ways to enforce what we can. For instance, the park in question, I was able to go out and identify some damage that occurred in the park, therefore we are closing it down for a couple weeks for repairs. It's a good time of the year for manure, and we will change the behavior for a few weeks and get them moving along. So I wish we had more tools at times from a legal standpoint, but considering where we're at, that's what we're going to do. But we can't be in a situation where we put up our hands and say there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty because every time I get numerous complaints, as most of our council members do, and we say, well, we're going to try to help you, but in reality, that's kind of a misnomer.
Well, we help a lot of people. I mean, I can't think of a time that we haven't responded to a complaint from the public or the business community.
No, I'm talking about open drug use, open drug sales citywide. I'm not talking about specific incidences. Basically, with the new law, which I think is going to really impact us, is now that we can't enforce solicitation for prostitution on Beach Boulevard. I know that it's still a crime, but then it just makes our job that more difficult. We're getting into the rotation system where the weather's getting warm here, and we're going to be inundated again. You know, the governor just signed a bill for some cities to where governments now will be setting up for heavy drug users. They can go to a government facility and shoot up their drugs. You know, these are things that are happening in our community, and it begins to blossom, especially during the summer months. And, you know, I think it's going to take a concerted effort with not only our outreach people, but our public safety team, and of course our sheriff's department is our number one tool that we have. And I just hope that we can provide some comfort level for the residents of Stanton beyond where we are now. Because people, I give you an example, the two GM gas stations on Cerritos just hired armed guards with guns 24/7. This is what it's coming to. This is the direction we're going. And, you know, people say, well, good, that's their responsibility. Well, you know, protecting the public is our responsibility, working with the business community. So I hope that the council takes this seriously, which I know you do, because we all swore that public safety was our number one priority. So it's just something that I would want to lay out on the table. I want to be transparent. I'm going to do everything I can working with you four to try to solve this issue. So thank you. Hey, gentlemen, thank you for what you do. Chief, thank you for all the good reports of your first few weeks here. Jim, I know you guys are working hard with our city staff. And, you know, I think we'll weather it, but I think we all know what we need to do. So thank you. Okay, moving on. That is a, that was, what number are we on here?
We are on 12D, receiving file, sir.
12B? Okay. Okay, we just finished that, right?
Yes, sir.
So okay, now we get to hear from Mr. Steger. Do you have anything?
I don't have a report.
Okay, thank you. And from our esteemed city manager, intern.
Mayor, nothing tonight.
Okay, great. Okay, we're going to get a report from the Orange County Fire Authority at this time from Chief Mark Moore. Come on up, Chief. Did I wake you up back there?
No, sir.
Our little rival.
Oh, you mean like the Guns N' Roses football game I coached every year?
Yeah, he'll get me outside. good evening, Mayor Schauer, Mayor Pro Tem, Ramirez, city and staff. Thanks for having me. I'm here for in place of Division Chief Steve Doman, who's out of town. I came to do the Stanton City Report for the month of June. Next month's going to be a lot different. But I'll just go through some of the emergency incidents within the city. The guys ran the crews here in Stanton ran 348 calls, which it averages close to 12 calls a day, sometimes more, sometimes less. That's pretty busy in the city of Stanton. To break it down, we ran 17 structure fire calls, 23 hazardous calls or service calls, if you will, smoke checks, auto alarms, field spills, 308 emergency medical calls, and totaled out to approximately 348 because some of the unincorporated area, we had two fires and 41 miscellaneous calls in that area also. So busy month throughout June, running medical calls and the fires. We'll see another report next month with the fireworks and 4th of July and some of the things that we did there. Throughout the county, or throughout the city of Stanton with the fire report, we've just been pretty much pushing the safety message. It's summertime, so it's getting hot. People are heading to the beach or swimming, so we've been pushing the safety message of safety at the beach, swimming at swimming in oceans, and how to survive those. Updated our website with some tips on water safety, ABCs of water safety. You can go to ocfa.org and review those just for a fun day when you're out with the water. There were no upcoming or no events this month in Stanton as far as community events, but we are planning August 5th, Stanton Nation Night Out. So that's the plans for the future. That's the report I have for you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Before we adjourn, I just wanted to make a couple of comments. You know, me being the dinosaur that I am, I've served with every city council, city manager since 1988. And I want to tell you all today that the smoothest transition that I can ever think of over the past 33 years was because of this young lady that's sitting to my right. And she brought a bit of tranquility to the city. And I think that without her, we wouldn't be in the position that we are, where we didn't lose a heartbeat. And I think that's very important to any agency that's moving forward. I'm gonna miss her. She actually kept me in line for 6 weeks, which no other city manager was ever able to do. So I got to give you credit for that. But she did it with love gloves, so that was okay. She didn't beat me up too bad. I know that she was able to take care of you four and all the demands you put on her, as well as the staff. She's going to now sneak back in and rescue the recreation department, which has sorely missed her. Although they kept right on beating like the Energizer Bunny without her. So that means that she had a pretty good program going there that she was able to get away for 6 weeks and nobody really missed her, so that's good. She is very young, and I will make a prediction that I probably won't be around to see it, but I think someday she's gonna make a fine city manager somewhere. So on behalf of everybody, we wanna thank you for a job well done and for your service. And we are going to be recognizing that at the next city council meeting. So thank you very much. Okay, Ms. Warren, you may speak up.
Vinny, I really went above and beyond. John found a car meet down at Sam's Club and had 100 cars at it. And we were watching people pouring pills into bottles and putting it in backpacks and going and selling it. There were illegal fireworks for sale at it, and there was edibles for sale. It was really bad. And Xenia, on her way to take her kids to see fireworks, came down and checked it out because we had all talked to Xenia about it, and we called the police about it. And so she wanted to see firsthand, and I was so impressed by that and the devotion that this girl has to the city. So, yeah. We're really lucky to have her and the incredible job she's done over the past couple months.
Yeah, the ultimate compliment is making the difficult look easy. You made it look easy. Thank you.
I will say that I know that the
city had I remember part of that meeting, they sent a letter when they were very upset. But after that meeting, they were like, we don't work for the city. We believe that they're on our side. And I think the big reason is that you were there. You weren't there before when we had interactions with them. They were a bit more hostile. But I think there's something about you that people just love. they relate to you, and it, they know that you care. And you really care.
Calming atmosphere. You have really kept everything calm. I mean, I love Jared, but sometimes the hair on fire and running around just didn't cut it. I like the calm, the professionalism, and the calmness, and just things getting done when they're supposed to be done, communications going out. Very nice job. Thank you so much for all your effort. We do appreciate it. And it was noticed.
And calm coming from you is a big compliment.
Thank you all. Very kind words. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I'm going to adjourn tonight's meeting in memory of Dr. Gene Wilkins. As we all know, he was the base for the Lions Club in the city of Stanton for over 60 years. I remember that he had asked me to pass out his flyers for his free eye exams when I was doing my food drive that. And unfortunately, at that eye exam, he caught COVID, and he was never able to recover from it. But he always cared about kids, and that was his bottom line. He was not selfish. There was no one that he ever turned down. I think they probably gave away 200 pairs of glasses that day. Unfortunately, we couldn't get everybody together, so we're going to do a proclamation, and we're also going to give a letter that we adjourn tonight in his memory. We're going to host the family here at the City Hall at a council meeting when it's convenient for everybody. So on that, I'm going to be adjourning in honor of our good friend, Dr. Gene Wilkins.